And in a way, the synod was right. The Slavophiles did see Orthodoxy as a free community of believers. Freedom was essential. Choice was essential. There could not be compulsion. Otherwise, how could it be a natural community? The Slavophiles also pointed to certain secular customs in the people that proved to them this specialness about Russia, this sense of communal social life. And in particular, they pointed to the peasant commune. They noted its regular meetings of peasants to decide important common issues about landholding and land use and justice in the community, even law. Now, in part, you can see all of these ideas represent what might be described as a conservative ideology. What they most admired in Russia, what was most traditional in their view, was most traditional about Russia. In other words, the Slavophile ideal lay backward in history, not ahead. But in doing this, in a strange way, the Slavophiles were also radicals, or some would say utopians. They were critical of the status quo. They dreamed of a new society. They believed very deeply that the cultural features that made Russia great, and made Russia Russian, for that matter, had been steadily eroded by the autocracy since Peter the Great, by the Petrine autocracy, it was often said. Beginning with Peter, who they saw as Russia's evil genius, the state had polluted Russia's spiritual specialness, its spiritual and moral community, with the philosophical errors of the West, with rationalism, with secularism, with, most importantly, compulsion. In other words, unity, order, was not natural. It was forced by the autocratic state on people. And the only salvation, they said, was to return to Russia's true natural roots, religious, collectivist, and free. Of course, this was a rather idealistic and, in fact, one should say, partly imaginary image of what the Russian past was like before Peter the Great. But like many mythic histories about the past, it helped inspire their thoughts about the present, a very critical thought about the present and the future. In fact, concretely, these arguments led to a no less idealistic and visionary image of where Russia should go. Practically, these ideas led them not to be conservatives politically, but led them to oppose almost everything about the existing political and social order in Russia, hence why they are truly members of the intelligentsia. They opposed serfdom. Serfdom didn't represent the natural community of peasants. It was imposed upon them. It took away their freedom. As one remembers from rebellions like Pugachev, peasants thought so too. They decried the lack of civil rights in Russia. They declared that it's absolutely essential that freedom exists for the life of the spirit, as they put it. They opposed the death penalty, widely used in Russia, as violating the sacredness of life, as well as, of course, taking away people's freedom in the most dramatic way. They even opposed government's excessive intrusion into private life, into cultural life, something that was so characteristic of the time of Nicholas I. They believed that society should exist as a free community, as a civic community, holding together by natural means, which they deeply believed were possible. In other words, in a lot of ways, the Slavophiles were not conservatives at all. They were rather visionaries, even radicals, one might say, who found a better future for Russia in an imaginary, at least largely imagined, past. Next time, we look at intellectuals who saw Russia's future above all in continuing and perfecting the reforms, the westernizing moves of Peter the Great. And these were, of course, the westernizers.